is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
In our view from the C-suite this evening, our guest is Chris Griffiths, CEO of Anglo American Platinum. Chris, good evening.
Hi, good evening, Chris.
Chris, you're a mining man through and through. Prior to taking over as CEO of Anglo Plat, you had a very successful tenure as CEO of Kumba Iron Ore. You obviously love the mining industry, so what catalyzed your interest in this tough, gritty industry? Take us back to your earliest days. Did you always want to be an engineer, a mining man when you were a child?
So I always wanted to be an engineer, but I certainly hadn't thought that I wanted to be a mining engineer. And it's my parents or, you know, nobody else in our family had anything to do with mining. And it was really in the army when we were doing our national service. I was straight out of school sent to the School of Engineers. And there was a whole range of engineers, and there were civil and mechanical and all sorts of things, and there were also mining engineers. And at that time, it seemed to be a growing industry in South Africa, and it seemed to offer good prospects. So I thought, well, okay, I'll go study mining engineering. So it was nothing more complex than that, and then at the same time, I was offered a running bursary at University of Pretoria, so I ended up studying mining engineering at the University of Pretoria.
Okay, and then after university, you know, trying to find out an awful lot about you on the internet is not that easy. It looks like you started off in around about 1990 sometime, if I'm correct.
I started working on the first of the decade when we still started working on the 1st of January. So I started working on the 1st of January 1990. Initially, I had a Goldfields bursar. I was a Goldfields bursar. I had a bursary from Goldfields. And when I wanted to study an honors, Goldfields said no, and JCI said yes, and so I switched to JCI, and after I'd studied my honors, I was sent to the poor cousins of the day, which was Platinum, and I did a little bit of work at Randfontein Estates, and then I was to the poor cousins of the platinum industry, poor cousins of the mining industry, which was platinum. And that's how I ended up in platinum. And then pretty soon after that, Anglo-American were buying up and increasing their stake in JCI. And at a certain point in time, they split the JCI business, so gold, property, and platinum was split out, and I went to the platinum division. And that's how I ended up eventually in Amplat and then Anglo-American Platinum. And, you know, and 30 years later, that's where I am.
Interesting you refer to platinum as being the poor cousins, the poor relations. I suppose in those days, gold was very much the flavor of the month.
Now, I think gold was much, much stronger in South Africa in those days. And platinum, whilst it was growing and whilst JCI had a very strong foothold in platinum, it very much was a much smaller business than the gold business of the day.
Yeah. Your time at Anglo-American, you're reading through the articles that have been written about you. I get the impression that you've always found Anglo to be a very supportive place. Tell us more about your experiences in the greater Anglo group.
You know, you think to yourself, how can someone work for a business for 30 years and still find it immensely challenging to come to work? And why would you want to get up at, you know, every morning to work in an extremely challenging environment? And the answer is that I've been given fantastic opportunities in Anglo-American. I've had lots and lots of different jobs in the company. I've been able to grow and bring my own personality to the company. So although in the early days Anglo Platinum was quite separate from Anglo-American, it was still a great opportunity to grow. I was given incredible opportunities. I was given amazing challenges, and it was just a fantastic place to grow one's career. But the other thing I absolutely loved about being associated with Anglo American was the way that they treated people and the way they thought about life more than just the company. So society and the way society featured and the way Anglo American did business always resonated with me. And whilst through my career I've been offered many offers from different companies, I've just loved working for the group because of the opportunities it's presented, the ability for me to make a difference in a company making a difference, and just the whole ethos of Anglo-American and the way they thought about society in addition to the company. I was just a great resonance with my own personal values.
Okay, well, just dialing back a little bit then to exactly one of those challenges. There you are, Kumba Iron Ore, 2008, CEO of the company. That's a very, very different prospect to anything involved with platinum. Predominantly, and when it comes to iron ore, we're not talking about deep-level mining. You're talking mainly, I suppose, open cast. How did you manage to make that kind of change?
As a mining engineer, Chris, that wasn't too difficult. I mean, it was a little bit different to mining, being, you know, quite different to the underground at Platinum. You know, I'd been already running all the joint ventures for Anglo Platinum at the time, so I had quite a wide variety of experience in the mining industry. I was asked then to become the CEO of Kumba, of iron ore, so the commodity was very different. But again, I think that was the benefit of being associated with Anglo American. There were new opportunities coming up, you know, frequently, and I was given an opportunity like that. Not only, I think, to help the company, but also to grow my own personal career. So I went to Kumba, didn't know all the answers, and I learned a lot from the Kumba team. But at the same time, it was we went through some really interesting times at Kumba. It was the height of the iron ore boom in 2008, and then came the global financial crisis, and we went from $200 a ton to $60 a ton. We had, you know, some very, very big challenges with government, both the government of Senegal plus our own government, with, you know, all sorts of interesting things called ICT, and we had to take government to court. You know, there was a lot of really good challenges in that time. I think we, by following the ethics of the company and our own personal ethics, I think we saved the company a lot of money. We did some really good things that were right for corporate South Africa. So I think, you know, the answer to your question, Chris, is I was given great opportunities. And the great thing is you didn't have to know all the answers to be given some of those opportunities. I think something that we still try practice to this day is to try and you know, put people into great opportunities. The water may seem a bit deep at the time, but there was great opportunities to grow and to contribute.
Excellent. I can remember well those presentations you and Vince Uren used to give at Summer Place, and they were always extremely well attended because they were wonderful presentations. So here you are in 2012, promoted to CEO of Anglo Plats, the world's largest platinum producer and sitting on the biggest reserves of platinum in the world. But hey, it's in trouble, a mountain of debt, some mines that frankly aren't fit for purpose, an oversupply of platinum, and overall an operation that needs to be streamlined. You must have felt like this was some sort of hospital pass.
Well, I remember my wife at the time saying to me when Cynthia offered me this role to come to Plats, I was very aware of the challenges in the PGM business, and my wife said to me, "Why would you do that?" But I just felt that number one, I could make a contribution. I thought that both for the PGM industry and for Anglo Platinum, there really was a big hole to climb out of, and I thought I could, together with the Anglo Platinum team and the Anglo American team, I thought I could make a difference. I certainly didn't have all the answers, and for the next 4 or 5 years, I wondered frequently what I had done. But we always had a plan. You know, it was very, very difficult. The PGM industry, after having some really good cycles in 2008 to 2012, that really showed the structural changes to PGM demand. And so actually the industry was very different, and we as miners had kept on producing as if the industry was the same. Half the industry was loss-making. You mentioned that, you know, every company had a mountain of debt. It didn't look like there were solutions. Just after I took over the business, you'll recall there was the Marikana massacre.
Right.
There was the longest strike in the PGM history of 5 months. There really was some big challenges. We needed to retrench 15,000 people in the company. We needed to shut down mines that were loss-making. We needed to fix other mines that were loss-making. And, you know, we did the restructuring first in 2013 and 14. And then we announced the repositioning of the company, and we took the company from 19 mines down to 6 mines. And that all had to be done, and we did that in 2015 and 16. We improved the productivity of the company immensely, and such that with 15,000, well, eventually it was 20,000 less people, and we produced the same amount of ounces as we did way back in 2012. And that was after us having cut about 800,000 PGM ounces. So, you know, we really did have a very large hill to climb. The debt, after the debt had peaked in 2011 at almost $15 billion, the company was recapitalized. The debt was almost at $15 billion again at the end of 2014. So this company was rapidly going out of business. And then systematically since then, in much tougher pricing environments than we have today, we were able to reduce debt every year, improve the productivity, improve the safety, and do some really amazing things with the company.
And you mentioned the most recent results. I mean, here we are, earnings more than doubled, great performances from palladium and rhodium, and a weaker rand help, obviously. But you're under no illusions. Things can change very radically. So how do you contain expectations at this point in time, notably amongst the workforce?
Yeah, so that is right. I mean, we are in wage negotiations as we speak. One of the things that that we are continually reminding the unions is, you know, finally the company is generating, and the industry, I think, is generating cash so that the industry can reinvest cash in its operations. And ultimately, that's actually in the long-term interests of the country, of the company, and of employees, so that we've got a long-term, stable industry. So that's the first place that we need to make sure that actually the money that we are generating, that's a good thing. But that doesn't mean that all of a sudden that that we should throw that money away or be reckless with that money or embed huge additional costs that just keep coming through every single year. So I think the way for us to manage, you correctly say that prices go up, they can also come down, and frequently do. We have set our business up to be profitable in a much, much tighter pricing environment. And as a result of that, I think we have the discipline around costs and capital to be able to manage through pretty much any cycle. But the cash that we're generating now and the position that we've got the PGM industry into means that we can start thinking about growth again, and we can start making sure that there's long-term investment into our existing operations. So I think that's the way to think about the long-term business. And then at the same time, you know, in discussions with unions, say, well, how do they benefit, for example, through the employee share ownership payments and those sort of things? How can employees benefit at the same time as the company in good times? Because, you know, as they rightly point out, they do take a lot of pain alongside with all other stakeholders in the tough times.
And then very briefly, because we're coming to the end of this this wonderful insight into Chris Griffiths, for relaxation, you seem to be an avid fan of the bush, so much so that you got up close and personal with a buffalo some years ago and ended up with life-threatening injuries. Tell us a little bit about that.
I am a keen birder. Myself and my wife spend a lot of time in the bush, and we just had a really unfortunate incident in the bush just over 2 years ago when in a camp at night we were walking to dinner and we surprised a buffalo. And when you come up close and personal with a buffalo, I came off second best, as you can imagine,
yeah.
with 1 ton of buffalo, you know, running all over me. So I was very badly hurt. But my life was saved by two very brave Tanzanian askaris. So, you know, I spent 5 months in a wheelchair, but I'm here to tell the tale. And we still go back to the bush. We love nature. And, you know, I think that love of nature and that also comes through in the way that we mine. You know, so I think there's a new breed of leaders in the mining industry that are, you know, really interested about and care personally about safety, about health, and about the environment. So, yeah, I love the bush, I love the environment, and hopefully I bring some of that love of the environment to the way that we conduct our business, so that, you know, that kind of environment is around our children and our children's children. Also, the wonderful thing, I'm going to sneak in a little selling story, but one of the amazing things about the metals that we mine, the PGMs, are such amazing metals that form part of the solution to many of the world's problems. And again, it's so amazing not only to be coming to work and to be making a big difference, but in the case of us mining platinum group metals, they just solve so many climate change problems, energy storage problems, coming up with solutions for decarbonized transport. You know, so it's great to feel that there's a greater purpose to one's work as well. And so, yeah, I am passionate about the bush. I'm passionate about the environment, and I'm also passionate about the metals we mine because of the contribution they can make.
Chris Griffiths, many, many thanks for giving us a fascinating insight into the man behind the platinum. That was Chris Griffiths, CEO of Anglo Platinum Group.